So first chapter, yeah, we are done with first chapter. So what's the striking point in first chapter? What can you relate with, you know, practical point from the first chapter? I was just thinking, I just wanted to hear what you kind of got from the first chapter. Some practical, I got something, so I wanted to share that, and I wanted to hear what you, did you get any practical points?
You always think from, for ourselves and our family, but never for Krishna and for his perspective.
That's a good point.
And then Arjuna was at the end of the first chapter, he remained confused and bewildered. Resenting, he was, that's our condition also, because we see the world from that angle where we are just looking at ourselves and bodily concern and everything from that relation.
That's what the same point I also thought. Same thing.
Dharma is not whatever Krishna says, that's dharma.
Prabhuji, close it.
No. That's fine. I'll be okay. Just give me 15 minutes. I'll be okay.
From the practical perspective, you expect a lot from the God. Like, hey, why, you know, if you are Govinda, why don't you actually go please me as well? Like, I mean, that's how you actually go and project it. Like, you expect that God is there to only help you. Like, it's a very selfish motive.
God is
like
an order,
business, order supplier.
Yeah, it's
a
order supplier.
It's a traditional way to look. Yeah.
So as Mataji pointed out, that's what same, I was thinking the same thing. So Arjuna, at the end of first chapter, he was confused and bewildered because he was acting on his own strength or own vision. He was looking from his own vision, right? So that's why he was completely confused and bewildered. So as Mataji pointed out, so we are all on the same platform. We, our thing, at any point of time, our vision is not clear, right? Sometimes, you know, it's like a sine curve. Sometimes we are really into and, you know, very joyful. Sometimes we are sad for some reason. Like, you know, it keeps varying. Nobody is, you know, happy all the time. Because we are also, sometimes we take control of the situations. And sometimes we listen to, you know, some senior Vaishnavas or senior devotees. And we try to follow them. We serve Krishna. At that time, we really feel joyful. But most of the time, we are sad because of our conditioned nature. Because we think we are the controllers. So that's the, at least that's what I could relate.
Actually, that's
first
why
chapter.
First chapter, you know, what is the title of first chapter?
Observing the
Amis. So the lesson is, like, if you observe the Amis from your point of view, what is the result you will get? So Arjuna observed the Amis from his point of view. So the result is, he was confused, bewildered, Gandhi Babu slipped, and he was tears falling, everything, right? But if you observe the Amis from Krishna's point of view, the result is different. So same thing, if we observe the world from our point of view, we always see what is in it for me, you know, how to enjoy, how to exploit. But if you see from Krishna's point of view, we'll see how I can use everything in Krishna's service. That's the difference between Maya and devotional service, right? What's the distinguishing factor between anything, right? What makes it devotion versus sense gratification? What distinguishes anything from devotional service versus sense gratification?
Who is the
beneficiary? For whom ultimately it's going to be there to please? Of course, we discussed, right? Surface level, it may feel like, you know, I'm doing for Krishna. If you go deeper, you'll find many other things which we want out of it. So those things will gradually go away with devotional service.
That's
you know,
the hope, Mataji, because otherwise, you know, we feel like, you know, children asking our dad for something all the time. Daddy, give me this. Daddy, give me that. Daddy, give me. After 5 minutes, you know, with our own kids, we go, right? Yeah. For that time, they will. Right?
But
yeah.
Krishna,
one
so
of the practical implication, at least one of the takeaways that I had was the whole analogy on like how watering the roots it means that you get everything. So because we are so conditioned to worship all the different gods and goddesses, whereas we don't realize how the if you are able to satisfy the supreme enjoyer, then all the paths are open.
Yeah.
So that's like a good takeaway.
Very nice. If we are just convinced of that, actually we are fixed in devotional service to Krishna. That's all. If you're just convinced of that, you know, if you have faith that just by serving Krishna, actually Prabhupada defines, I don't remember where exactly, but he defines faith like that. Faith means it's a sublime, maybe not faith, it's like it's a complete conviction that just by serving Krishna, all my things will be fulfilled, desires, everything will be fulfilled. That faith is important.
Implicit.
Because that's
faith.
What, yeah.
Implicit faith. Yeah. I like what Prabhu was saying that it's like a child that does not look up to the parent, oh, this minute it will be there, next minute it will be there. So it's completely confident that the mother will be there all the time. So
yeah, very good. So the if you want to be peaceful and happy, like we have to surrender to the Lord. And the good point Prabhu brought out, like father, right? And we know we are all sons of God or Krishna. So if you are always with the father, right? You always feel protected. Do kids worry about anything, surroundings, when they are with the father? They don't even bother, right? So they are very happy. But now we are, you know, our father is somewhere, we are all, you know, lost. So that's our situation. So we are in a, you know, crowded market, we are lost. And we are looking for, you know, you can relate. It's just, you know, if you put in shoes, that example shoe, we are all like that. Our situation is like that.
Yeah, that's why now we are aware, right? So we have to manage everything on our own. Like, you know, we have to know we have to earn money, you know, take care of food, everything. Like so much from the beginning of the day, we have to run around taking care of so many things. But like pure devotees, and you know, they completely depend on the Lord. You know, they have that much faith also. It's not artificial. We can't imitate, suddenly say, oh, from now on I'm going to depend and, you know, don't feed your wife and kids. It's not like that. But that's, we can see actually when we see all the sannyasis, right? You know, they have not even married, right? No experience of kids. But they are so happy and satisfied. And who is, they are not even earning a salary actually. Who is maintaining them? Right, Krishna is maintaining them because they have that much faith in the Lord, and so eventually.
So one of the major fears that we have is the fear for future, right? I mean,
yeah.
What's going to happen tomorrow? You know. So are these sannyasis completely devoid of that? They don't think about tomorrow.
Because they know Krishna if he's taking care of present, he'll take care of future, also.
Yeah.
Right.
Sannyasis are supposed to be like that. If they're really following, they don't worry about. Like you, many, they don't even have bank accounts, right? You know that. Sannyasi and all, they don't have
like
bank accounts.
If you have
account.
Money, then you have to worry about money. If you don't,
yeah,
then
they don't even
money.
Have bank
like
accounts
you don't
or
have
anything.
Family, anything so,
yeah. So they don't even bother. And of course, you know, if that sannyasi is, you know, very genuine, people automatically they take
Krishna
like,
inspires through them to
people,
help them.
Right? Like for example, here, a lot of sannyasis come here. They don't have a bank account or they don't even have home actually. They go to different places. Like for example, Rampad Maharaj, they come here. He stays in somebody's house for 4 days or 5 days. So many people wants to serve. Done, his job is done, he packs up and he goes to the next place. Like that they travel, that's their duty to them. Yeah, because they have renounced, right? The danda they carry, I think that's what it represents.
Yeah. It's body, mind and words. It's called three danda, three parts.
Danda.
With body, mind and words, I'm serving the Lord.
Completely dedicated.
Complete dedication.
So that was
but
first
for
time.
Us it is so hard from very childhood of what we have been believing in, everything is totally different than what actually we should have believed, right?
Yeah.
Because we relate to like my father, my mother, like everything is like based on your...
Yes.
I'm Sangeeta. As of now still I think I'm Sangeeta. But
yeah.
Do I actually realize that I'm not Sangeeta? I have been something else from previous life. I could be somebody else in next life. So it's not like just, it doesn't come right away immediately.
So hopefully by end of 18th chapter, we all will come to that realization.
See, that's why we miss that education from our childhood. So, but we now, since we have at least trying to realize something, so our duty is to educate our kids. See, that's where our, you know, completely, it's burden on us actually. The previous generation, somehow, you know, the time was changing. I don't know for what reason they didn't cultivate properly or whatever, they missed the opportunity, but now we are getting the opportunity, so we have, you know, we have that burden on us. Share with your friends, share with your family, share with your kids. That's how you can benefit others. We'll see, this second chapter talks about something called
actually
compassion.
That's why second chapter,
so we'll
the
about.
First thing Krishna talks about is to say, you know, what is soul, what is body. That's what is the basics of spiritual science he starts with. ABC of spiritual life, no? That we are not the body, we are the soul.
Just a logistics question. So last week you were about to start with the first chapter overview PowerPoint. Are you going to share it with us?
It's on the website. Did you put it on the website?
No, I didn't put it.
Okay.
We'll put it on the website. If you do that worksheet,
okay,
the one we sent, worksheet and I think the QA, small QA, if you do that much, I think for exam that's more than enough.
Okay. And this also I can share if you think it will be useful.
I think it will be useful.
Okay.
We'll put it,
it will have highlighter points and all.
We'll put that, but if you do that worksheet and this thing, that's more than enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So let's... So the... Chapter 2, it has 72 verses, and as we know, it's a summary of whole Bhagavad Gita. And later part, we are going to, you know, more detail. Krishna is going to dwell more into details of it, but now he's going to cover, and it's also called Sankhya Yoga. According to Acharyas, it's also called Sankhya Yoga because it gives the explanation of, it differentiates between spirit and matter. Sankhya means it's accounting, right? It's analysis. So this chapter, it will be Krishna will clearly differentiate what is spirit, what is matter. So the second chapter is also called Sankhya Yoga. And in this chapter, so Krishna takes position as a guru. He takes really control of the situation. Arjuna was, you know, he was giving so many reasons. Now Krishna is going to take the control, like as a guru, he is going to act as a guru. And also, this is the first time where he is going to speak also. Arjuna, first
question. All these chapters have the heading in English. What is the appropriate Sanskrit heading? Do they have like contents of Gita summarized? Is there a separate heading in Sanskrit which is proper?
Yeah, I think there is. First one. Yeah, but I don't think it's not there in Prabhupada, this thing.
Okay. It may be in the old version, like, you know, they. But I.
Some
even
of the lectures, if you listen, they will tell, like, for example, 15 chapter or 10 chapter is called Vibhuti Yoga. It's because it's the opulences of the absolute, like that. I don't remember.
Universal form, like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can find out. I think I'll write down. I didn't write down.
Okay, we'll start. First word.
So we'll recite together.
Sanjayo Vacha. Tam tata kripaya vishtam ashru purna kuleshanam visidantam idam vakyam uvacha madhusudana sanjayo uvacha tam tata kripaya vishtam ashru purna kuleshanam visidantam idam vakyam uvacha madhusudana
Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana, Krishna spoke the following words. Should I continue?
Yes.
Material compassion, lamentation and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. The word Madhusudana is significant in this verse. Lord Krishna killed the demon Madhu, and now Arjuna wanted Krishna to kill the demon of misunderstanding that had overtaken him in the discharge of his duty. No one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nescience cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Sudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya and his conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man. And for this purpose, the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. This chapter instructs us in the self-relation by an analytical study of the material body and spirit soul, as explained by the Supreme Authority Lord Sri Krishna. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self.
So you were asking, right, Mataji, how will we get this realization? Right? So here Prabhupada is telling, this realization that we are the soul is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self.
So here in this verse, Sanjaya is telling like Madhusudana, right? He's calling Krishna Madhusudana. You know what's the reason? What is he trying to... It signifies something here.
It's there in the purport we read there.
So at the end of the first chapter, right? Arjuna dropped, he gave up all the weapons and all. He didn't want to fight, right? And at that time Acharya says, Dhritarashtra, because he was live broadcasting the events, right? Sanjaya was a secretary and he was live broadcasting to Dhritarashtra. So in that case, Acharya says, so when Dhritarashtra heard that Arjuna put, you know, his weapons off, so Dhritarashtra was happy a little bit because he thought there's going to be no war and he will get the kingdom for his sons. So that's why here Sanjaya calls Krishna Madhusudana, because it signifies that Krishna, as he killed demon Madhu, he is going to kill the doubts which has arisen in Arjuna's mind and he is going to come back and fight. So he is kind of, you know, putting him down. Don't be, you know, if you have that
illusion,
if you are in that illusion, don't be in that illusion. That Krishna is going to kill the doubts in his mind, in Arjuna's mind, and Arjuna is going to come back and fight more vigorously. So that's why Acharya points out that's why he was called by Sanjaya as Madhusudana in this particular context.
So what type of compassion has Arjuna has?
Material
compassion, right? Full of compassion. And what's the result of that material compassion? His mind is depressed, his eyes full of tears eventually. That's the net result. On contrary to that, what's the actual needed compassion?
Self-reliance.
Compassion for the soul, right? Spiritual compassion. So how to... So Prabhupada gives this very nice example to distinguish that, right? So somebody is drowning and somebody went to rescue them and they came back with a quote saying, you know, I rescued this person. Then the other person is asking, why you didn't rescue the person, you just got the quote. That person is drowning, right? So then he said, oh yeah, but I thought this is a man. So that's how it is. So our body is like a covering to the soul. So if we just take care of bodily needs or even act as a compassion at that level, then we are not really serving the soul. But we'll come to the other point also. At the same time, we cannot neglect that. We'll come to that. Like for example, another analogy is there. Like somebody has a bird, golden, very nice bird, in a golden cage. And every day he spends time polishing the cage, but he doesn't feed the bird inside. Eventually the bird will die. So like that, we spend so much time and energy maintaining this body, you know, doing so many things for the body, but we forget the soul and we forget to feed the soul. Now not only ourselves, first we think about ourselves, right? We are not so compassionate to think about so many people around the world. Ourselves, right? How much are we investing time? We can think whole day, like we can invest. Of course, gradually we are improving like that. But we can think how much of the day are we spending in just trying to, you know, fix up things versus how much we are trying to do things which directly will help the needs of the soul. Right?
Every second of our life is filled with that. It's like fulfilling our desire.
Right.
Every second.
Yeah. So what's the difference in, like, you know, what's the difference in the effect? If you take care of the body so much versus taking care of the soul, you know anything about eternality of the effect? So if you take care of the body, how long will it last?
This life.
At the best, this life. And we know, you know, the pattern, it grows old and disease, birth, death, that's common and everybody has to accept it. I was coming in the bus and some old lady and one old man, they were talking. They were talking about sentiments, like usually everybody has sentiments. And she was telling, the greatest sentiment I have is that, you know, I feel I'm not going to die. Then he was telling, it's a myth, it's not sentiment. So like everybody wants to live forever and hope that they live forever, and then in that pretext we try to you know, take care of so much of the body, neglect the needs of the soul. But whereas whatever little we do for the soul, the effect is eternal. It's not only this life, actually it's a spiritual bank account. Spiritual bank account, and whatever you deposit from next life, you take it from there. You continue where you left off. But material things, whatever you acquire in this life, you come empty handed, you go empty handed.
Is that
karma? Whatever you do for your soul, is that the karma?
It's not karma, it's spiritual thing, yeah. It's a karma, so it's devotional service account. That's eternal.
There is a saying, right?
A lot of accounting needs to be.
We came naked and we go naked. Not even anything you cannot take. General, it's very common.
Okay.
One of the Prabhupada lecture also, I can correlate one example. The example was, if you are not spiritually strong, you will have a lot of fear while you will die.
Yes, yes.
But you don't have that knowledge. If you are spiritually strong, you will be very happy when you are dying.
Yes, yes.
Of course, that's a fear.
Yeah.
It's compared to, if I remember the exact number, I'm not able to recall. It's actually, you know, it's analogy where it's compared to a bite of scorpions.
Yes.
At the time of
million.
Death,
yeah.
40,000 40,000 scorpions, or 43,000 scorpions.
So at the time of death, so any person, he feels that much pain.
Yeah.
Like, you know, together at some time, there's some thousands of scorpions biting. One scorpion, we know, it's poisonous also, right? It's pain, actually. After bite, body starts more pain. So you can imagine thousands of things biting at a time. So what is that pain? It's not, of course, it's not, for sure, it's not a physical pain, right? It's not really biting. But what is that pain?
Mental. The attachment, and then all of a sudden everything you have believed is not right.
So at one shot, we have so many things. Now at some, once in a while, you know, something goes, we lament.
See, imagine like you are attached to something in a car or mobile
everything,
or whatever, right?
Everything.
Something happens, that whole day you spend thinking about it, right?
Yeah,
and imagine the moment of death, all the things you are attached to the whole life,
everything.
And all people,
just like that.
Everything is going away. That 1 second, like that.
So that much pain. It's that's what it's compared in scriptures. That's what it said.
And in addition to the same example, and that moment, if you can remember God,
yeah,
then you will get liberated.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah,
you will forget.
So you then, what's the training we need? You know, can you imagine?
Mm.
Constantly thinking, so that that one instant you are not caught.
So if you have to be conscious at the time of death, so it has to become your.
Like
primary
secondary
nature.
Secondary
nature.
Secondary
nature. Not,
it's
yeah,
like
second nature. It should
cycle.
Just come. Yeah, it should
it's
be
like
part of your life.
In the cycle. Yeah. Once you learn, you don't forget like that. It
should be part of our life.
So the verse where Krishna says, you know, there is no loss in devotional service, is 2.40.
What should be a part of life? I didn't get that. So we should not think that everything is like.
No, devotional service should be practiced the whole life.
Not once in a while. It should be part, you know, continuing. It should
so
be part
2.40, of Neha bikramano nasosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam api asya dharmasya trayato mahato bayat. So Krishna says, in this endeavor there is no loss or diminution. That means, you know, there is no deterioration. It's always profit. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from most dangerous type of fear. Even little. Actually, later on, I think we discussed earlier, right? Arjuna, when he hears about all this Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, he says it's too difficult for anybody to follow. What if Krishna, I'm not able to succeed? I take up devotional service, I'm not able to succeed it. And I will be like, you know, like riven cloud. Riven cloud is cloud, a small cloud which is broken from a big cloud. It's neither here nor there. It didn't join another cloud, and it's not also part of the mother cloud. So it's lost in the middle. So am I going to be like that, where I don't have material success, I don't have spiritual success, right? I'm taking devotional service, that means I'm leaving something material, and here I'm not succeeding yet. Let's say I didn't come to the final spot of devotional service. So am I going to be lost? Then Krishna is going to tell, no. If you have practiced devotional service for a long time and you left it, because of something, then you will be born in a devotee's family to continue from where you left off. So all the kids who are born in devotees' families, they are continuing from there. That's why they are much, much more fortunate than all of us, because from the childhood or even within the womb, they are eating prasadam, they are chanting Hare Krishna, all this. So they are very, very special souls. But and also Krishna says, if after short time you practice and you leave, then because you have material desires, you will be given chance to take birth in the higher planetary systems, where you have a you have a chance to fulfill all your desires, come back again to material world to continue devotion service. So even so, those are also options. Like, you know, if I feel like, oh, maybe 90 years is not enough for me, what if I don't succeed, here I lost the material life, no, yeah, I'm not even successful in spiritual life. Krishna says that also, even across the lives, there is a way to, you know, take it up. He says, that's what is going to happen. He's going to arrange like that.
Why can't they carry a material life people like, so, over there, can't directly meditate and then go from there?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
He said, like, if someone is in the initial stages, he'll go to higher planetary systems, he'll enjoy and then come back. And then again, why can't they continue from there?
The enjoyment is much more actually.
You won't even think
actually
about
demigods, they pray to come to the earthly planets to practice devotion service. There the amount of luxury, sense gratification is so much that of course there are devotees there also, but it requires much more determination to be devotees there. Here every 1 hour you'll get some pain. So you have to remember somebody or the other, right? So it's easy to, you know, remember Krishna because the whole day is filled with sorrow, happiness, all those things, right?
See, in this material world itself, we don't try to think about God or practice devotional service because we feel we have some enjoyments, right?
Yeah.
But in the higher planets, it's more multiplied. So there, even, you know, your lifespan is longer and you don't
and
have diseases
less,
and all.
Yeah.
Very, you know, you don't even have, I think, Ramalok and all, you don't even have. So you just want, you know, you just spend time like, it just goes like that, you won't even realize. Until you come here and again, you know, realize that. But of course, if you come, when you come down.
No, but see, the problem is that, why do we think of God? Because we get some pain. It's like you stub your toe, only then you say Amma, right? Then otherwise, till then what, we don't. So
yeah, otherwise usually we don't think.
Yeah, generally that's, we are all like, you know, most people who come to devotion service are
because
of distress.
99%, right? That's what they
exactly.
Say.
Yeah.
For Krishna says four kinds of people come to me. Chaturvidha, Bhajante, Mamin, which verse? I don't know. We have to look it up. So one is distressed, other one is seeking knowledge, other one is seeking wealth, other one is
inquisitive
knowledge, inquisitive
seeking.
We can look up that verse.
But I used to say something. Dukume Sumiran Sabad.
Yeah,
Dukume
Kalil. That's the
Chaturvidha 7.16. Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Yejana Sukritana Arshuna Artho Jignyasi Rathati Jnanicha Bhattarishabha. So he says, O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive. Okay, inquisitive is different from one who is searching for knowledge. So these four, among them, distressed is the most category people come usually.
So
in the first verse, Prabhupada was talking about compassion, right? So practical thing here is, so when you see somebody, like for example on the street, some beggar or something, so is it good to give them some money? What happens if you give some money to them, that person?
Any might
beggar?
Not use it in the
So what happens? So if he uses him, for example, most of the people, they smoke. Mm-hmm. We know the tobacco and all, right? Most of the people. So when we give some money like that, right? Knowingly, we know most of the people, they use it for tobacco, drinking and all. So if you give some money, so you're going to get reaction for whatever he's going to perform action. So you're going to share that.
But what if you don't know, like if you do it unknowingly?
That's why, if we know, whatever is akarma, we know, right? If we help them in that way, then you don't get karma. See, for example, you can give them prasadam.
Yeah, nice
food, right?
Right?
How do we know we are on the way?
No, that's a practical thing. It's not situations may not apply all the.
This ignorance part is true for this law, material laws also. See, there are so many laws in that, like for each state or each thing here, that lawyers themselves don't know. They have to go and read. But you still cannot claim ignorance from the law and commit a crime. That's what they say. So that's true in both words. Ignorance is not an excuse.
So that's why
you know Harivilas Prabhu says, if you have so much money, you want to donate somewhere, be sure where you are giving. So you know, if suppose there is Krishna temple and they are using Krishna service, you'll be clear how it's being put to use. So you know there is no doubt, and you don't have to think, oh, my money is going, what's going to do, and how much reaction I'm going to get, like that. So something which is very clear, and
the other thing is compassion. So we should not take it to the extreme where, for example, if somebody is not feeling well, they're sick, and you cannot tell, oh, you're sick, your body is not, like, it's basically on the bodily platform.
Especially, we should not use this with our wives and children.
So we should not go to we cannot apply like that. That becomes,
we get very expert in using philosophy in the right way, in so-called right way, right? So, when my wife is sick, she says, oh, Prabhu, can you please help cut vegetables? No, you know what? You're not the body. You don't know that.
She has the knife. I will not say that.
So we cannot do. So the other side. See, the thing is that also should be connected to Krishna, right? So why we want to help take care of the body? Because the body is helping us in serving Krishna, right? So that is also connected to Krishna. We cannot at the same time say, this is all material.
Yeah.
Material, when it's connected to Krishna, it becomes spiritual. So this body is meant to serve the Lord, and I'm using my best to do it. For that, I need some amount of minimum health standards. Otherwise, I'm down. I can't even chant, I can't even walk.
That's one other way to look at it from what Harivilas Prabhu was saying, right? This is Krishna's body, not ours, right? Yes. So we have to take good care of it like that.
Yeah,
that's another right.
Way. Because body, once we die, are you going to take the body? No, it's going to disintegrate. It becomes part of the earth. And the earth is part of the material nature. So Krishna belongs to Krishna. So our earth actually belongs to Krishna. So we have to use our body in the service of Him. So that's these are all, when we talk to somebody, you cannot tell, you're material, you're talking on the bodily platform. You cannot scold or tell people.
Yeah. So another point is Krishna, actually later on He's going to say, right? When later on, first verse Krishna is going to speak, right? It says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The same thing.
Second.
Yeah, actually Krishna is going to tell, He is feeling Arjuna, you are my friend. So He didn't yet start. It's going to start in the next verse. Yeah. Arjuna being a Kshatriya, his conduct of lamenting unnecessarily is not expected out of him. Because that is a behavior of a Shudra.
But
person
in Parmashrama, Shudra is more based on the activities that you do. So why is lamentation not analogous to Shudra?
Yeah, because his activities are like that, right? I mean, his thoughts, everything are to lament for something which is material. See, really a Brahmana who is fixed in Brahman, he will not lament for matter. Right? Because he is identifying with the body, he is lamenting unnecessarily. So it's a low class,
like a low intelligence.
Exactly, yeah.
Basically, the level of spiritual advancement.
But for us, that's
less.
So normal. We think,
so
you
even
know.
Even though the Varnashrama is basically a division of activities that you do.
Nature.
No, it's
not on the activity, it's on the nature.
Guna and karma.
It shows up. It shows up. Yeah, guna and
karma. Guna and karma. Guna is the qualities and activities. This is the quality.
Right.
Shudra's quality is to lament unnecessarily.
You should put a Bhakti Gita and Vedic math and then you have double the room size.
Today, first day, I don't know how many people will come next week.
35 people signed up for 7 to 8 months. And 8 to 9 there is another.
Alright, since total 120 fits. Okay, we can go on to the next one.
The quick question on the soul. Yeah, this you and that epithet on the top, how do you pronounce that? Like Ashru, Purna, Purna? I mean, how, what is it? Like A and R.
Yeah, it's a Dirga. You know Dirga? Telugu, I'm telling.
Dirga.
It's a.
Dirga.
Yeah, exactly. See, small U will be Ashru, right? See, small U will be Ashru. This one will be Purna. So it's not Purna, it's Purna. So A also, small A will be like thumb, right? Next one is Tatha. Yeah, Dirga. Yeah.
I can read the Devanagari, but how do I split it? Because it's such a long.
Yeah, that's the problem. When I read, I can read some Devanagari and I need to split.
Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudana. I mean, how do I. In English, it's like Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudana.
You have to see English.
Yeah. English. Yeah, that's fine. We cheat by doing that. Like, look at the board. That's where
it's.
We just hear, if we hear often. Like when we hear often, we'll know, you know, how they are saying. So we'll just
actually, there is a, if you know Devanagari, there is a way to pronounce it. We are not doing the right way because we don't know how to do it. But a very nice, you know, very wonderful
it's
way.
It's quite
phonetic,
right? So, Tantatha
Tata Krupaya Vishtam Shrunu Purna. See, that's how you split it. Say Krupaya Vishtam, then that's where it's split. Shru.
Ashru.
Yeah. So, but Vishtam, that's how you split it down there, right? But it's still one continuous word up there. Vishtam Shru Purna Kulekshanam. That's what it says. Totally.
Okay.
Krupaya Vishtam Shrupurna Kulekshanam.
Ashru.
Yeah, I know, Mother. I'm just telling you what is written out there.
Is
no, no, there is. Ah, right. Why are you saying Shru? I don't understand.
No, Hindi.
Hindi.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right?
Mushroom. Oh, you're reading Hindi and you're trying to.
Yeah. So we don't know where to split it. That's what he was saying, and I'm saying, just for example, take this. This is what I'm saying.
Like Mushroom makes sense.
I don't read the Hindi, I read English.
That's
most difficult part is like wherever they are dot, I don't understand how to pronounce. But in Sanskrit, I can pronounce okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is no dot or.
And then I tried reading some chapters just in Sanskrit, it is like really hard, like the words.
Yeah.
You get stuck so many because they're full, like
big
lot
ones.
We were discussing that in the first chapter.
Yeah.
Sahu Prabhu and I, oh my god, how on earth are you going to split this?
Yeah, Krishna and Arjuna, they're speaking in that language, imagine.
We will speak.
Yeah.
Like this.
I think speaking is fine because speaking is split, right?
That's right.
So, and in Sanskrit, the way it's written, the sounds come after the words. So, we need to really look careful. So, for example, so ka and ru is kru, right? That's fine. But like when the ra sound comes, like shrupurna. So, purna, that the ra sound comes after the na. So, you have to look for it carefully.
It's coming before purna.
No. But when you write it, the na is on
later.
The top, right? So, that's why I'm saying you have to really look where it is coming.
Okay, we'll come back to
second verse. Analytical study of Sanskrit.
We have started the analytical theory. We need another class. We have to read.
See, the next line is just one word.
Yeah.
We can go to the second.
Sri Bhagavan
Uvacha. कुतस्त्वा कश्मलं इदं विषमे समुपस्थितम् अनार्यजुष्टम् अस्वर्ग्यम् अकीर्तिकरम् अर्जुन श्रीभगवानुवाच कुतस्त्वा कश्मलं इदं विषमे समुपस्थितम् अनार्यजुष्टम् अस्वर्ग्यम् अकीर्तिकरम् अर्जुन.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They do not lead to higher planets, but to infamy."
So this is the first time Krishna is speaking, right? Or he spoke initially a little bit, right? Something.
No, not at all?
No,
this is the first time.
Okay, this is the first time. He smiled, I think, so far. No?
Yeah, he was just smiling.
He was just smiling.
That's what that.
Okay. So this is the first time, and look what Krishna is saying. Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows value of life. The man who knows value of the life is Arya. Anarya means a person. See, if you look at word-to-word translation in the fourth line, Anarya is person who does not, who do not know the value of life. So Arya is person who knows the value of life. Anarya means one who is not Arya. They lead not to higher planets but to infamy. So they don't. They essentially, Krishna is saying it's going to lead to infamy. So we'll discuss that.
So although in this one, first time Arjuna is introducing Krishna, right? Because Krishna, or this thing, Sanjaya.
Sanjaya is introducing
Krishna, and he is calling Sri Bhagavan. So that means he is emphasizing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And you know, to just emphasize that, you know, he is the Bhagavan. And also in this, in the purport we can read now, Prabhupada says about
Krishna and the Supreme Personality of the Godhead are identical. Therefore, Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman or the impersonal, all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, this conception of the absolute truth is explained thus: Vadanti tat tvavidas tatvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabdhyate. The absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the absolute truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan.
We'll stop there. Later on, Prabhupada is going to tell example of the sun planet to elaborate this further, but we'll just talk a few points about this. So what main point Krishna is saying, Prabhupada is telling, is that no, Krishna and Supreme Personality of Godhead identical. That means Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these days, everybody calls themselves Bhagavan, like Bhagavan Rajneesh, Bhagavan this, Bhagavan that. But actually, the Bhagavan is not a title to be given. It's only one person has that name or the ability to be called like that. Because the definition is there, right? What's the definition of Bhagavan?
Six opulences.
Yeah, so introduction we covered. Six. Bhagavan is the one who has six opulences in full. Now, let's have a quiz. So what are the six?
All renounced.
Okay.
Fame, all wealth.
All wealth.
Fame,
fame.
Power.
Power.
Beauty.
Wealth.
Wealth
is over.
Wealth is done.
Knowledge. Did we call knowledge? Okay.
No, we didn't.
Six. All of this in full. Many of us, or maybe not us, but many of the people, they have all of this maybe in little, or one in full, not full so much.
No, nobody has.
Nobody has full. That's why living entity can have at most 76%, right, of all these qualities. But only Bhagavan Sri Krishna has all of these in full. That's why he is called Bhagavan.
So if you hear somebody's name saying Bhagavan, because there are many Bhagavans today in generally. So if you see somebody, you know, you can always hold this definition. If they really falls in this category, then you can call them Bhagavan. If they don't, that means they are bogus. You can directly, clearly, you can differentiate and you can tell they are bogus.
We were discussing about some example we can tell, right, in this context. Prabhupada was telling, no, we can discuss in the class. I forgot. About Bhagavan personality, I forgot.
The one thing I could recall is somebody called Prabhupada also. You know, because initially they came to US here, right? Because these people didn't know. So anybody, you know, who has a little bit power or a little bit of, you know, the following, people following. So they used to call Bhagavan. So somebody called Prabhupada also, you know, your Bhagavan. Who joined the ISKCON movement and who was following Prabhupada. He started saying, Prabhupada is Bhagavan, Bhagavan. He was, you know, propagating basically like that. Prabhupada is Bhagavan like that. Then Prabhupada came to know that, you know, he is doing like this. immediately, you know, he called him chastised and he removed from the, like, he sent him out. You should never do that one, because he doesn't qualify as a Bhagavan. So that's the duty of any spiritual person who is going to guide others. If somebody comes and calls you Bhagavan, you should clearly clarify.
Yes, so one person asked somebody, you know, they are calling him Bhagavan. Then they asked why they are calling you Bhagavan. He said, no, I didn't ask them to call. They are only calling. What's the... No, I didn't tell them. They are only calling. But you know, if you are responsible, you will tell your followers, no, I am not Bhagavan. Don't call me Bhagavan.
So, onus is on the...
There is a duplication in the six. There are only five that I wrote down. All renounced, all wealthy, all fame. Wealth came up twice. And
beauty.
Beauty and knowledge.
Beauty, knowledge.
Renunciation.
Renunciation is, yeah. All renounced. Power.
Power.
Yeah,
all power. Or strength.
Yeah. That makes
but we used to, for all demigod also, we called it like Lord and demigod name, right? So
Lord.
Yeah. Why
yeah.
we are
yeah.
calling that?
So, for example, in Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is also called, addressed
called
as Bhagavan, and Vyasadeva also called as Bhagavan. So in that context, these are like, you know, personalities empowered with certain quality of the Lord. Because of that quality, because of that empowerment, they are addressed like that. But people are addressing, they know the context. It doesn't mean that they are like really Bhagavan. But they are specially, for example, Narada Muni is specially empowered in devotional service. So in that way, actually Krishna himself says, I am Narada, actually he says, like, for example, yeah, in opulences he says, like, I am sun god, I am moon god. In that way, everything is actually Krishna, but at the same time, it's not Krishna.
Or maybe like one of the opulences.
Yes, exactly. So one of the opulences are prominently manifested in that. So there are different avatars, right? One is Vishnu avatara.
Vishnu.
Then there is Vishnu Tattva expansion. Other one is Guna avataras, like Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma. They are Guna avataras. Like mode of passion, goodness and ignorance, they are in charge of them. Then they are Leela avataras. Leela means pastimes, like Narasimha Dev and Varaha, all these, they are Leela avataras. Then there are Shaktiavesh avataras. Shaktiavesh avataras means they are some human beings, or they are empowered with a certain power from the Lord. Like Vyasadev is incarnation. Rishabh, he's also actually.
Parashuram is actually.
Yeah, Narada Muni, right?
He's
a devotee actually. He's not God. He's a devotee. But he's completely transcendental and pure, liberated person. But he's empowered with that power of devotional service. In that context, they call them as Bhagavan. But it's not to be confused that, you know, that they are treating him as equal to Krishna.
These three divine aspects can be explained by the...
So the next point is that Prabhupada is talking about absolute truth, and there are three phases of understanding the absolute truth. This also we covered in introduction, right? So what are the three aspects of understanding the absolute truth?
The impersonal, personal,
So impersonal Brahman and Paramatma, and then external is topmost is Bhagavan. So, who will explain these three things? Like, what are the characteristics of these three? Or like, what does it mean? Like,
we gave two examples,
right?
So
one is
the sun planet.
Brahman is?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Brahman is Krishna's effulgence. So, some characteristics are, basically it's the impersonal form of the Lord. So, you don't see any personal features. So, basically Brahman is... the sun rays of light emanating from the Lord. So it's just rays, you don't see any form of the Lord, right? And some people who want to be impersonalist, they follow a certain process to become part of the Brahman. So they just want to be spark in the Brahman without any relationship with the Lord. So there are two types of them. Among them, one is Mayavadi, other one is Brahmavadi. Anyway, we'll not go into that. Next one is little bit more personal realization of the Lord is Paramatma realization, where these are yogis usually. When they meditate, in the heart they can see 400 form of Vishnu standing on the lotus, right? And some people, they can get confused that, you know, that is me, actually I am that Vishnu, but actually super soul, they see the super soul. And some personal features are visible, like, because you know, you can see four hands and lotus and Lord's dress, everything. some personal features, but not still complete realization. So beyond that is when you do pure devotion service, you realize Bhagavan, where you can see him in Goloka, you know, his pastimes, his personalities, qualities, all the things, all the different variegatedness of the personality of Godhead. So that is a complete realization of the absolute truth. That is Bhagavan.
One sentence about Mayavadi and Brahmavadi difference.
So Brahmavadis are, they accept that the Lord, the ultimately Lord has a form, but they are more attracted to the impersonal aspect of the Lord.
That's what is Advaitam. Is that Advaitam or Mayavadi is Advaitam?
Yeah, Mayavadi is Advaitam.
Then what is Brahmavadi?
I don't know I don't think there is like equivalent of the Sanskrit like that.
Okay.
But they, what they want is, see, if I hear about these three aspects, right? That Brahma, personal Brahman and Paramatma and Bhagavan, if I tell to somebody and somebody says, oh, I'm more attracted to the light, I just want to be part of the light, I don't want to deal with anything. Of course, I know, I accept maybe Lord has form, you know, he has activities past time, but I'm more attracted to being a spark. So they are Brahmavadis. So they are not offensive to the Lord. They don't say, Lord doesn't have form, no, he doesn't have eyes, he doesn't have ears. That's what Mayavadis say. Mayavadis say, ultimately, the Lord is impersonal. We all, you know, come, we all become that one. So they are offensive to the Lord. So that Mayavadis is actually very, it's not conducive to devotional service, whereas Brahmavadis can become devotees. Mayavadis also can, with lot of mercy and, you know, lot of purification.
Hariras Prabhu was mentioning about that thing in his class. The description also Mayavadi day is more negative only.
Yeah.
Attain Nirvana, which is more complete. Yeah, it is different.
Yeah.
Complete detachment for everything is what they.
But my thing is like for this yogic also, they go through so much of austerity, penance, and all these things to achieve that point. So it's always difficult to achieve supreme personality of God. It's never an easy task.
Yeah.
Definitely, devotional service is not an easy task either, right? Like every
it's
second,
because
they are going through a very different path. Devotional service has a different path, but ultimately, none of them are easy.
So Prabhupada in this says devotional service is simple for simple people. Complicated for, or difficult for complicated people.
See the, so the you know what's the difference between these two? Prabhu knows that example of a cat and
cat and a
so
monkey.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So basically, yogi is trying on his own effort. That's why it's very difficult. But whereas in devotional service, Krishna is lifting us.
Yes.
Krishna, how they, you know, it said.
The analogy.
There is very nice statement. If you want to hold with your two hands, and if Lord wants to take away, how much can you hold? But if you want to, you know, receive something, and if Lord wants to give with his hand, how much can you hold? It's like that. So, if the Lord is lifting you for the in the path of devotional service, what is the harm? Like in the sense, where is the failure? As long as you are sincere.
So, I will add that she just reminded me. So, Prabhupada was telling this one. So the way you differentiate between yogi and a devotee, so he was telling how, you know, how the monkeys carry their babies and how
cat.
Right? Cat carries the babies. So in the case of monkeys, the baby sit on the
mother.
Baby holds
baby
on
clings
to the
monkeys.
Wraps
yeah.
Cat the mother holds
on the top. Cat. Basically, monkey, the baby sit on the top.
It's top and sometimes
bottom,
in the
bottom,
yeah.
But it
holds
by
yeah.
Baby's responsibility,
yes.
Not to
so
fall.
Its
yes.
Own strength. It
it's
tries
own.
To hold on to the
mother.
Big monkey.
On to the cat.
But in the cat case,
cat has to hold.
Cat holds it like the neck, right?
Yeah.
Mm. It's the same.
It's cat's response.
So whose strength is here? The
cat.
Cat is having the holding the baby. So in that case, so yogi is compared to a monkey because he's holding on to his own strength. So anytime he can fall. But in the other case, cat is holding. So Krishna is holding you. As a devotee, he protects you by holding.
So Sharanagati also, it's called the cat example. They use it. Marjani Sharanagati is only, it's called Marjani. In Sanskrit is cat. I forget what it is for the monkey.
Kapi.
Yeah. Kapitvaja. No, I think there is one other name. But that Sharanagati is what the monkey touch.
But then even though you are saying that the sincerity is also difficult. It's not like that sincerity itself could be just a word. But when you apply in every second of your life, that's when you
realize that's the only thing we need to do. That's all. Every second, just try to be sincere. That's
easier
all.
Said than done, right?
No, we have to do that. That's all.
No,
just
okay,
just no, first, we don't need to do all this. First, we all have to come to a point where from the heart, as Prabhu was saying, right? We have to have that conviction. No, that's it. This life, I just want to give to Krishna. Once we, in the heart, we make up that conviction, then that's all. Everything else will fall in place.
See,
because once that is there, what does Krishna do? He just reciprocates with the desire.
If you have that if you have the conviction, once you are convinced, nobody can stop. Right? It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing blocks, no obstacles on the path.
That is true.
It's that, that's why it's so
see initially when we came, right? So of course we are hearing all this, you know, oh I like Bhakti Bhiksha and all these programs. I know there is some happiness which I never experienced and I'm liking it so much. But of course I had other friends. So when I go and talk to them, they said, oh, why are you going there? You know, they are brainwashing. What are you experiencing? What is this? You know, they will change everything. Then because I don't have much realization, I was like, oh, is this true or this true? What is this? Which one I should believe? But when I come here, I see that my heart is so satisfied. Then, okay, I was just betting on that and I was just continuing. Eventually, of course, I was not in touch with all of them. And, you know, now realization comes. See, now if that same person will come and tell me like that, then I will just think about their welfare. It's like, how can I, you know, how can I bring them to this realization, what I'm experiencing? Right? Because they don't have that experience, they're telling like that. So once, what the point I'm trying to say, once we have that realization, nobody can take it from us.
Yeah.
Nobody can say, that's Prabhupada also says, right? How can you know you're full?
If you're full, if you eat something.
While you're eating something, will your wife come and say, okay, you have eaten enough, stuff. Stop. You can only tell when you're full. It's like that. So when we have had enough of sense gratification, we know when we are full. And we say, okay, now I want Krishna. We all have to come to that point. Yeah, we all have to come to that point. Okay, so now in the next paragraph, Prabhupada is going to give the example of that sun example to describe these three aspects of the absolute truth, so which will make it even more clear. We can read this.
I have a question, Mataji, before you go to Prabhupada.
Yes, Prabhupada.
Why is it that the beginning as, you know, all that Krishna did in this. And this is that, you know, he just chatted him like, hey, you know,
he's
he chastised him and then that's it. And this, and, but there is a lot of purport behind this. So, why is it that this, I mean, there's a lot of other things that are not related directly to what was said here as well.
Oh, okay. So why
how
the
do I, how do I relate the purport to the text? I'm kind of confused.
Yeah. So basically, it's about, you know, Prabhupada takes certain points and emphasizes those. Like if you see here. The first point he's emphasizing is about Bhagavan, right? Because there is a common misnomer that Bhagavan is misused. So that's the first point he's making.
Mm-hmm.
The second point he's making about is elaborating on what are the three different aspects of absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this same thing might have come in a different context. Rather, it would have been more appropriate in maybe in the purport of this 1.2.11.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada, you know, it is not so localized actually. He is seeing from, you know, as somebody said, right? From this point of view, very high level, right? So he talks in that context. He's giving now a general picture of like what is the three aspects of absolute truth and some example of how to understand them.
But it's nothing to do with what Krishna said here.
No, this is the
it's,
no,
this is,
no it's there.
He's saying, right? That's why
he said Sri Bhagavan, right?
Why, yeah, Sri Bhagavan.
First he said why Krishna is called Sri Bhagavan,
okay.
Right? He told all that. And then he's saying, what is Bhagavan? Bhagavan is the final realization of absolute truth.
Okay.
Right? So then, what are the other aspects of absolute truth? One is Brahman, one is Paramatma, one is Bhagavan. So he's now explaining how, you know, how to understand these with an example.
Yeah, but Sri Bhagavan Vacha was okay. This is the first time that we ever said Sri Bhagavan Vacha.
Yeah.
Correct. That's because that's the first time Krishna,
the first time Krishna is speaking. Yeah.
That's why it requires a lot of...
That's right.
Okay.
And Prabhupada,
but actually that's a good
emphasize.
Way to learn. When you read something and say why he is saying like this, then
mm-hmm.
you will understand a little bit deeper. That's a very good way to understand. But not in a challenging way. Like your attitude is very good. Like, you know, how is it related to this? When you ask, then you get these connections. Like, you know, he says Bhagavan, okay, Bhagavan is topmost of absolute truth. Then absolute truth is described. Then there is an example to understand the three aspects of absolute truth. Then you can connect everything.
Yeah, I have heard, because you know, Prabhupada, whenever you say Sri Bhagavan Vacha, he tries to make it very clear who is really Bhagavan. Because already there are, you know, I don't know how many, 600 versions of Bhagavad Gita? Something
seven,
like that.
710.
No, 600, right?
Keep going.
Some versions of Bhagavad Gita.
So, I have 2-4 at home already. I just bought this one.
Okay, so one practical application, all of you, I don't know how many of you read the verses at home before or after. If you read again, what you can do is, you can write, you know, highlight main points, like how, you know, the topic is changing, or rather how the context is changing. So for example, every 4 lines you can write one heading, subheading. Then you will know, then you can, you know, see how Prabhupada is laying out the purport. Like for example, in this case, right, first is he defined who is Bhagavan and what, why is Bhagavan related to absolute truth, and three aspects of absolute truth. And next is going to talk about example. So we'll continue this, you know, just as an example. Then we will continue and do this in this exercise, in this purport. Then you can see, you know, how we can bring the points out. Okay. So.
These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself.
So sunshine is referring to its analogy for impersonal Brahman. Sun surface is Paramatma, and sun planet is Bhagavan.
One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced. And one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness, and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature, may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the supreme absolute truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists, who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth, are the topmost of the transcendentalists. Although all students who are engaged in the study of the absolute truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another, and yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category.
Okay, so it's clear, right, Prabhu, this example?
Yeah.
I think many of us heard this earlier, but this example is a little bit clear, makes it the three aspects.
So, but this is not progression. Like, you need not, you get, can you know the absolute truth only when you have known all the three, or just Bhagavan?
If you know absolute Bhagavan, you'll know all the other three.
Oh, okay. So, it's not a progression or something. That's just like,
somebody can take the gradual progression, but we can directly take to Krishna also. If you serve Krishna, you automatically know, you see everyone as part and parcel of Krishna, right? Super soul, you'll see them, right? You'll also see how all his energy is connected to Krishna, which is nothing but Brahman realization. So you will see that, all the thing, but it's a subset. So so it's basically sunshine is impersonal nature. So it's similar to Brahman, and then sun surface has some personal aspect. Like, you know, somebody who studies, you know, can know dimension, and you know where the rocks are, where whatever, some details, right? And sun planet, one who enters, right, they can see the sun god in the chariot, he's traveling, and you know, he has his family and all those things, right? So more details. So similarly, Bhagavan realization, more details, Paramatma, and sunshine is Brahman. Okay, so that's the second point. Third point in the purport so far. Okay, next one.
Yes.
Now Prabhupada is going to define what is Bhagavan.
The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The supreme personality who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned and very much detached. But no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc. entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity including Brahma, Lord Shiva or Narayana can possess the opulences as fully as Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in Brahma Samhita by Lord Brahma himself that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord or Bhagavan known as Govinda, and he is the supreme cause of all causes.
Okay, so now what's happening is, after defining Bhagavan from Parasharamuni, now Prabhupada is telling, you know, how everybody else cannot be Bhagavan, right? So now he is going to the second point where, you know, whenever we make a statement, we need to show from Shastra how that is true. So that's what Prabhupada is going to do now. He is going to quote from authorities to say how Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So first he is talking about Brahma. Brahma makes a statement in Brahma Samhita about how Govinda is the supreme cause of all causes. And later on he talks about another verse from Bhagavatam. So that's the second now theme is changing now. He is giving examples to prove that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ishwara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the supreme person and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord Govinda and the cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita 5.1.
In the Bhagavatam,
also there is a list of many incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Krishna is described as the original personality of Godhead from whom many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. All the lists of incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions or parts of the plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of the Godhead Himself. Bhagavatam, chapter 1.3.28. Therefore, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the super soul and the impersonal Brahman.
Okay, so now you got it. To make that conclusion, therefore, right? He established so much, premise. Right? First, statement of the first per line of the purport is, Krishna and Supreme Personality of Godhead is identical. He can end the purport there, right? But we cannot be convinced, right? We need more understanding.
Does this mean that Sanjaya is more aware of who Krishna is than Arjuna is at this point? Like, because he actually says Sri Bhagavan Vacha, he knows. He kind of.
Yeah, because yeah, Arjuna thinks Krishna as his friend.
Still, yeah, he is thinking as a friend, right? He is talking on a friendly term still.
Yeah.
The next one, where.
Later on, Arjuna submits, you know, I'm your disciple.
Yeah,
then Krishna
later it changes.
Krishna also so far never acts like, you know, he never takes a position to instruct. But the moment Arjuna says, I'm your disciple, surrendered to you, please instruct me.
How does Sanjaya know about Krishna more? Like, is there a story?
No, actually, Arjuna also knows about Krishna, but
it's
he is in the under Yoga Maya potency where he. So, how can one have intimate relationship with the God? God is all powerful, all these things.
Like Yashoda Maya and all.
You can
that.
Have only when you forget that he is God. So that is under the influence of Yoga Maya, and that is favorable for to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. It's not nothing wrong with that.
Mataji, so, Vyas Muni also blessed actually Sanjaya with special.
Yeah, I was also.
To see the.
Dipa Drishti and, you know, their powers. So he can see that.
Vyasamuni, first year he knew that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he actually blessed Sanjaya.
Yeah, he was a disciple of Vyasadeva. Sanjaya was a disciple of Vyasadeva. So he was trained in the devotional service, and as a blessing he got to, you know, see that vision. He could visualize what's happening on the war field, and he could convey that to Dhritarashtra.
Okay, so
And he was a student of Vyasadev, so he was.
Does it mean Dhritarashtra also got all this knowledge in that moment?
He was offered, but
he didn't take.
Because
he
no, he's talking about the Gita knowledge, right? You're talking about the Gita.
Yeah.
No, we are also reading. How many of us are going to get it? So,
Dhritarashtra was also hearing.
At least we are trying. Some.
Yeah, he was.
No,
hearing.
No, no. I'm not.
Dhritarashtra said, "I don't want it. Give it to Sanjay." He suggested.
Even if you see it, hear it, and what is the use?
That was your question, Prabhu. Whether Dhritarashtra
he got educated,
no,
right?
Actually, it said Bhagavad Gita is heard by all the warriors in the battlefield.
Oh,
both sides. Everybody heard.
I was presuming other way around, like only Arjuna.
No, everybody
heard. Listen, not other.
Everybody heard.
And only Arjuna was able to see that the Virat Roop only, not the others. That was my...
Yeah, that
so
Krishna gave
yes.
vision to only Arjuna.
Only but everyone was listening.
Yes, Sanjay
also
yes.
Sanjay
yeah,
also
Sanjay also saw from here, yeah. Okay.
I didn't mean that as an insult, Prabhu. I'm just saying everybody gets this, but who
is yeah,
this?
That's
this
a point,
right?
Correct.
Yeah,
that's
so
a good
so
point.
You got this point. To make this conclusion, Prabhupada has to establish, proof. Like, why can we accept, why should we accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead? Okay,
it's
next.
It's like math theorem, Prabhu. You
yeah.
write limit sin
make a
theta
statement.
Tends to 0, sin theta by theta equals 1. But the proof that follows is 5 pages, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So.
No, we have to prove it, otherwise, it's...
Otherwise, it becomes like
versions.
Sentiment. I can
yeah,
make so
many
statements, but... Where is Shastra evidence?
In earlier there was like including Brahma, Lord Shiva and Narayana. So I was considering Narayana and Krishna is same. But
so they are actually, they Prabhupada says, so if you take
Krishna
at home and somebody Krishna at office. So that's the differentiation Prabhupada gives. So how do we treat two different personalities? One is
like a judge in the
home and judge
at home, you are all you can have more
intimacy
and more we discussed right the relationships Madhurya all those things and somebody at office
you can only have official relationships.
Only official
relationship. You are comparing with the office.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what it is because Narayana is all about
awe and reverence.
You cannot have any other relationship with Narayana, Lord Narayana.
You cannot have conjugal relationship with, you cannot have friendship with Narayana.
You cannot have.
But
it's
you can have
it
with
worship
Krishna.
With awe and reverence.
But this question is also like...
So in that way,
yeah.
He is not so equal to Krishna. Because what happens is, in a specific incarnations, Krishna manifests certain powers which are needed for that incarnation.
Yeah.
Like Narasimha Dev, right? He is specifically empowered for protection of his devotees and power. So whenever any devotee is in this thing, immediately they think of Narasimhadev. Even though maybe he is also form of Krishna, so I can think of Krishna also. But Krishna empowered specifically Narasimhadev, or rather Krishna came in the form of Narasimhadev specifically to give protection to his devotees. So that form is meant for that.
Okay.
Like that. So at the same time, he is Vishnu Tattva. He is not different from the Lord. But there are specific powers which are demonstrated more prominently. Others are not demonstrated.
So
Krishna demonstrates all the powers 100%.
Yeah, 100%. So in this two qualities I can remember is like playing flute. So only Krishna has that
quality.
Playing flute.
Mm-hmm.
Even Lord Narayana doesn't have that quality. Like he doesn't have that particular feature. So that's why it's considered Krishna is the... Full, like 100%.
What are you trying to prove with that flute point?
That
means some qualities are exhibited by Krishna,
okay.
Which are not by other forms of
not
the Lord.
Other forms of the Lord.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's why he's full in 100% full in all the whatever
opulences and qualities.
Dependent question is like Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. So is there any difference in between both again or?
Yeah, that's also like.
Different
like Lord Rama is just one of the form of Lord Krishna.
Yeah,
so
that's why this verse says Krishna is the original Lord and from him all the other incarnations like including Rama, Narasimha, Narayana, everybody else comes from Krishna. But they are all considered Vishnu Tattva equal actually. But their difference in the sense of their exhibition of powers, that's all.
We don't differentiate, like, you know, like Lord Ram is different, Lord Krishna is different. We don't really differentiate because they're all on the same Vishnu.
So if you worship them also, you go to
Vaikuntha. So far I was considering like both are equal, but now it's not equal. Lord
so
Krishna
actually,
is
okay, one clarification.
Has like all upper senses, and Lord Rama is like with some.
Yeah,
no,
with
he
not
has,
full.
But he doesn't exhibit.
Exhibit.
We cannot see. Actually, at our level, we should be very careful about this, because we may commit offenses.
Yeah.
These are very, very finer details, right? So we may commit offense saying, you know, Rama is, you know, we may treat him as like one of us, or okay, he's not God anymore, right? So we may say like that. So we, okay, we'll understand it. But we will not, from our like low level perspective, they are all gods. They are all can give, you know, actually Lord Shiva.
Vishnu Tattva.
Exactly.
They are all Vishnu Tattva. That's very important.
Vishnu Tattva.
Yeah, they
Vishnu
are all gods.
And if you worship Rama and Narasimha, you can go to Vaikuntha planets. That's also liberation from cycle of birth and death. But the rasas will be different.
See, Lord Ram, he exhibits different rasa. Right? He came as a... What do they say?
Ekapatni
something,
Pratha.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he demonstrated that particular feature. Right?
So during that time, actually there were several rishis, they were doing tapasya.
Yeah.
They approached Lord Ram and said, we want to have conjugal rasa with you. We have that feeling for you. Can we? He said, no, this form I'm meant to have only one wife. I'm going to come as Krishna. At that time, we'll have that.
The
so,
gopis, they took birth as the
gopis,
all the rishis, most of the, you know, rishis. That's why this is very, you know, until we understand the whole tattva properly, otherwise we kind of mix up, jumble up, again it becomes hodgepodge.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because
we'll
I was reading
study.
This comparison, like,
yeah, yeah. No, anyway, Prabhupada, in later, we'll kind of, you know, everything gets...
That's why many times Krishna, Prabhupada says... Vishnu or Krishna. Many times
yeah,
you see, you say Vishnu or Krishna.
Everything, he doesn't,
because
you know,
for our that. From our point of view, both are all are equal actually.
They are same, Vishnu.
So
Narayana.
Point is to know how small we are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shows.
Okay.
So
in the next, you were asking.
You want to. So in the purport, not the purport, but explanation of that Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11. This is all realized in three phases of understanding, whether knower or the absolute truth, and all of them are identical. So that means the understanding in each of these phases is identical. So what does that identical mean?
Okay, the absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the absolute truth. All of them are identical. Identical in the sense that they are all approaching the absolute. But see, for example, later on Prabhupada says, like after this sunshine example, the sunshine, see here, therefore, the bhaktas or the transcendentalists who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth are topmost transcendentalists. Although all students are engaged in the subject of the absolute truth, are engaged in the same subject matter. Right? At a broader sense, all of them are engaged in study of absolute truth. The sunshine, sun disk and the inner surface of sun planet cannot be separated from one another. Right? They are all related. Yet, the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. That means they are not. We cannot consider them equal.
So that means there is a hierarchy.
Exactly, there is hierarchy.
But
there is
identical. But identical in the sense that the purpose is the same.
Exactly, identical in the sense of approaching. They are all approaching the absolute.
Okay.
Same.
But within that, because one is approaching personal, one is approaching little bit personal. One is there is differentiation.
Okay.
That's called abheda. Anyway, we'll discuss later.
Yeah. So from top, from absolute perspective, they are identical. Because Krishna will think they are all coming to me, right? But from down perspective, they are different, because one is seeing only little, one is seeing more, some one is seeing full.
But they are going to reach the destination.
Yeah. Okay, now the next point, after establishing all this, we'll come to the actual essence of the verse, which Prabhu is waiting so much. Like, why Krishna is using the word, you know, this where from? And like, why is he talking this verse to Arjuna?
Therefore, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the Super Soul and the Impersonal Brahman. In the presence of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsmen is certainly unbecoming, and therefore Krishna expressed his surprise with the word Kutaha, where from?
So to establish that point, like, you know, Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, in front of him Arjuna is saying that, you know, I cannot kill my kinsmen, so that is not at all, you know, meaningful. So that's why Krishna is saying, where from? You know, I am God, I am in front of you. You are telling you don't want to fight. Where did you get all this from?
Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of men known as Aryans. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Persons who are led by the material concept of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of absolute truth, Vishnu or Bhagavan, and they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans.
So here Prabhupada has defined who is Aryan, who is non-Aryans. So we should know these definitions and understanding. So what is Aryan? Who is Aryan?
Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know the aim of life.
That is non-Aryan.
That's non-Aryan.
Okay, so who is Aryan?
Would seek liberation from this cycle of
life. So basically you can say, you know, spiritualists are Aryans, materialists are non-Aryans, yeah. Simple way. Yeah.
So who knows the value of spiritual life or who practices spiritual culture? So somebody in history thought they were Aryans.
Right.
Who's
Hitler, the Hitler's Aryans. Right.
You remember all of you?
No, actually, the historical
Hitler?
Thing is people who came from the Indo-Germanic, migrated from the Indo-Germanic.
Yeah, so I will come to that point. So first point was, so the Hitler, so he had this, you know, superior, whatever that complexity, right? So he built that. Because they thought the Germans are more superior to everybody else. So that was the propaganda they did actually. That they are Aryans. Everybody else is non-Aryans or less superior, less this thing. So that's why they started dominating the whole world. And that's one point. The other point was, as you said, so I heard from Prabhupada lecture. So this theory saying, you know, Aryans came from, I don't know which, maybe north or somewhere, right? They came and they spread in India, all those things. So that's all bogus theory.
Right. Well, there are Aryans and there are Dravidians, right?
No. That's been debunked thoroughly.
Yeah,
see,
yeah.
That
right,
was
completely.
During pre-independence days,
mm-hmm.
where they were taught to feel that, you know, white is Aryan, black is Dravidian.
Yeah, that's
kind
all.
Of feel. Hey, Krishna himself is black. What else? So anyway, so the point is that has been debunked thoroughly. Every professor who has come,
yeah.
has said, you know, that's nonsense.
It's already...
There was one landmass and they were there and they migrated. This.
So the whole thing was basically Bharatvarsha. It's like Bharatvarsha, right? Completely one. So who were the Vedic people who were there, who were following, they were all Aryans. And later of some point, they kind of spread from India. Basically, India was the main known for the spiritual values and the spiritual culture. So from India, actually, the people went. It's not from people came from somewhere. And they were Aryans, they came and settled in India. As you said, Aryan and Dravidian theory, those are all bogus. So people who follows in India, right? So they are also called Aryans. Whoever follows the spiritual culture, they are all called Aryans.
Mm.
And generally, as we know, it's becoming non-Aryans, as Prabhupada says. Now
we only had three categories, like meditator, transcendentalist and bhakta. So which one, the Aryan actually, you know, like... If you see from that angle, Aryan who knows the value of life, so it's like a devotee is can
it could be Aryan. Yeah, here it's very general definition. So any person who is aiming for spiritual realization can be considered Aryan. He may maybe follow a different path, maybe
yeah.
he may like impersonal path or something else, but at least he knows, you know, I have to get
the
out
value.
Of this world,
yeah.
he knows there is goal is spiritual,
yeah.
then here according to this definition he is considered Aryan. And who is non-Aryan is a person who doesn't know value of life, who doesn't want liberation from bondage, right? And he is attracted by the external features of the world. So these are the, no, if we ask like who is Aryan, non-Aryan, give brief description, give examples, you should be able to tell that. So,
okay,
we can read
finish
it.
This
okay.
Although
Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans.
Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen.
So why Krishna is calling Arjuna as non-Aryan here?
He's
deviating
from his responsibility as a Kshatriya.
So, as a Kshatriya, doing his duty helps him in his spiritual life. Right? So, Aryan means a person whose goal is spiritual life. That means whatever he does for spiritual life. But by not doing his duty, he's not helping progress in spiritual life. So, Krishna is calling him non-Aryan.
But what is Shudra then?
Shudra is also like that only, right? A person who is... lamenting. That's why, you know, he calls him in Shudra, like Prabhupada calls him Shudra in last verse.
Shudras and non-Aryans
are the same? Yeah, we can say, like, okay, Shudras, we can define them according to Varnashrama, like, you know, what are the qualities, what is
context,
their behavior.
Yeah. It's
but
a context.
It's a definition, like, what do you measure against is the change. Here we are measuring against who is inclined to spiritual life versus who are not. There it's based on qualities and activities.
So the act of cowardice and how some non-Aryans means do not understand the value of life, and how is cowardice compared to that? Cowardice means you're afraid to do something. Non-Aryans are not afraid to do something, they just don't know the value of life, which means
so Arjuna
here is backing
like
off, right? He doesn't want to fight. So
you cannot take this statement and think, you know, this is a definition of a non-Aryan. No, act of so non-Aryans are always covered. You cannot do reverse. Like converse is always not true, they say, right?
Mm.
He's saying this act of cowardice is not befitting because of this, he's stopping doing his duty. That's the conclusion. That's the connection. But doesn't mean you just take the statement and say all non-Aryans are covered. That's the difference. Okay. So are we done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faith. 8:40.